Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, December 11th, 2024, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. If you're wondering where Ron is, for the month of December, we will be flying solo because we usually record on Mondays and Ron is not available on Mondays. So I'm recording here and there, stacking up some shows so that, and I'm not necessarily recording on Monday. Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. So anyway, you're hearing this on December 11th. So we're thick into the holiday season. Very exciting. So the first thing I'll do is I'll update you on my most recent visit to my beloved naturopathic physician, Marissa Hauser, over in Hebron. And so she's helping me get through my tick-borne illness. So I saw her and I talked to her about the fact that I'm doing my Buhner herbs. When they do the Buhner herbs, what they like to do is they like to have you take a dropper full, which is 30 drops, three times a day. And so I've only been doing two droppers a day. But I'm doing a lot more herbs than I was before I went to see Marissa. And so anyway, it seems to be working. I'm feeling better. My energy is better. One of the things that happens is that toxic fatigue that I've been getting, I'm not getting it as much. I felt pretty tired last night, but then I slept and now I feel fine. So sometimes when I get the toxic fatigue, if I'm very tired at the end of the day and I feel extremely tired, I sleep into the next day and I wake up and I'm still not refreshed. That's not happening anymore. And that's very exciting. And one of the things I did, because I was putting all of these herbs that are tinctures in alcohol and I was consuming the alcohol, I think the alcohol was bothering me. And I thought that two of the herbs, cordyceps and Japanese knotweed, were giving me headaches. So I pulled them out and the headaches improved, but it was probably just that I was consuming less alcohol. And Marissa's great advice to me was, well, if it may be the alcohol that's bothering you, all you have to do is put the tinctures in hot water and the alcohol will evaporate off. So I started doing that. And it's so much better because I'm not great at metabolizing alcohol. And if I want to have alcohol, I'd rather have a margarita or a glass of wine or some Baileys than, you know, have it in my tincture, you know. And so when you put the herbs in water and the alcohol evaporates off, everything tastes better and I'm not getting that big hit of alcohol. I was basically consuming a drink every 3 days, which is a lot for me. I mean, I'll have one drink on a holiday and that's pretty much it. And then I'll forget that drinking is an option for weeks or months and then I'll have another one. So I'm allowed to drink as much alcohol as I like. The reason is I forget to drink. I know I have a nice bottle of wine in the fridge and that I got a few weeks ago at a friend's house and it's just sitting there. So I should probably have a glass of wine tonight. So anyway, maybe I will, maybe I won't. I don't know. So that's been helpful. So I've been able to take Japanese knotweed and I've been able to take cordyceps. And I think after a while, the cordyceps kicked in. Because when I was taking cordyceps a while ago, I think it did help me with my energy. So cordyceps, really nice herb. It is a weird fungus that in nature, it grows on ants and caterpillars. But when you buy cordyceps from commercial companies, it's generally not. It's grown on fungal culture. And so no animals are harmed in the producing of the cordyceps. So I'm taking a couple droppers of the concentrated cordyceps extract every day, and that's helping. And I'm able to take Japanese knotweed, but she wants me to take three dropperfuls of all of the different tinctures. And I'm only doing two, but I'm getting better and better. And I said, why do I have to do so much? What if my body can't tolerate it? She said, well, if ultimately you can't tolerate it, that's fine. But to eradicate these ailments, you really need to take the full strength dose. That's what we've been studying tends to work. So I said, what if we picked a few of the herbs that are the most important to take more of? So we did that, and we picked out maybe 4 or 5 of them that it would be more important to take a lot of. Japanese knotweed being one of them, cryptolepis, not sure about sweet Annie, that might have been one of them. The other thing we did is we combed through my Vibrant Wellness Lyme test, the one that's very sensitive and specific, because I hadn't done that with her. The results were not in her chart because they had been ordered by Mariah. So her staff downloaded it and we looked through it together and we realized that I had been exposed to Bartonella as well as Babesia and I hadn't realized that. So she said, good job, you have the 3 B's. 3 B's, what are those? Borrelia, Bartonella, and Babesia. Yippee! She said, you're fine, you're taking things that will kill Babesia, you're taking Sweet Annie, you're taking Cryptolepis, you're taking Japanese knotweed, you're good. So I'm good. So anyway, I've been fighting all of those and I feel like I'm getting better and better. I've been riding my bike regularly, which is really great. I had been diagnosed with bone-on-bone osteoarthritis. My patellas are touching my femurs. Right now, I'm in virtually no pain, knock on wood. And I have these terrific bamboo-imbued compression sleeves that I wear while exercising and whenever my knee gets sore. I had some extra soreness after riding a few times last week. And on an evening that I felt the extra soreness, after I had ridden my bike outdoors that day, I iced it. Next morning, much better. So I'm rebounding better. I'm very excited. I'm trying not to overdo it because I do want to get well and I know the importance of rest. The other thing that's happening that I'm very excited about is my sleep seems to be better. My sleep seems to be more restorative and I'm going more hours over the night without waking up. I don't know how much of it is it's dark out and just everybody wants to sleep now and how much of it is it's nice and cold in the bedroom and I sleep well when it's cold in the bedroom. You know, I like to be snuggled under the covers with it cold outside of me. And of course, sleeping in the cold, if you look at a lot of different of health professionals, Dr. Mercola, for example, says it's really a good idea to sleep in a cold room. You're going to sleep better if you do. I don't sleep well in a hot room. I don't know who does. Ron is, he wears a lot of clothes to bed and a lot of blankets, but he sleeps pretty well, I think. So anyway, my sleep has been better. And the exciting thing is that I feel extra tired at night. I wake up in the morning and the sleep is effective. I'm waking up refreshed. So it's like, oh, this is so great. So I'm having a day after a work day today after having a good sleep and I feel good. And that's great because now I can have a nice day today after I do this. We're going to go get our packets for the Manchester Road Race and we are going to walk, not run it this year. There's a few things we want to do today. So I'm going to have the energy to do that. It's so great. And then I'll go to sleep at a reasonable hour. I don't have patient care today, so I can get some more relaxation. So things are moving along. I'm very happy. I don't know what's going to happen to my knees. I mean, what Dr. Moss had said was that ultimately you may need to have your patellas replaced, but I'm not there right now. He says right now what we do is we manage pain. And if you have pain, we help you with that. So the pain would be helped with drugs. I have virtually no pain, so I'm not going to be taking any drugs for that. And I have to believe that some of the things I'm taking for osteoarthritis is helping to rebuild and soften the pain in my knees because I'm taking curcumin and I'm taking fish oil, taking collagen, and I'm taking black cumin seed oil, all things that are steady to help with osteoarthritis. And who knows how much Lyme disease has been contributing to my advancement of osteoarthritis. I certainly have osteoarthritis in my family, so I do have a hereditary component to it, but Lyme disease can certainly go after collagen. Lyme loves to eat collagen. That's why you take ashwagandha. Ashwagandha is an herb that blocks hyaluronidase. So Lyme spirochetes produce hyaluronidase. So hyaluronidase is something that breaks down hyaluronic acid, which is a component of your joints, and ashwagandha blocks that. I can't take ashwagandha because ashwagandha raises my GABA too much and makes me crash out. So as all my, I have a lot of patients who take ashwagandha, it relaxes them, it's good for their immune systems, I can't take it. Echinacea also helps with, has antihyaluronidase in it. So I'm not taking echinacea either. I don't want to take too much echinacea. I would have to take tincture. And as much as echinacea is a great thing to take for your immune system, I don't want something to bother my stomach. I'm taking so many things, I just want to protect my stomach. So the way I'm doing it is by reducing inflammation and taking collagen, also taking bone broth protein. And it's the soup time of year. So Ron is making soups with bone broth as a base, which is really great. So I'm getting collagen and collagen components into my body to help rebuild. And I had asked Mariah a long time ago, a couple years ago, if you take collagen, the spirochetes go, they have this hyaluronidase in them. What happens if you take collagen? Are the Lyme spirochetes going to go after the collagen that you're taking? Is it worth taking collagen? She said, yes, take the collagen because you're overwhelming your body with collagen. And if you're giving them, if they're breaking down some of the collagen that you're eating, better that they go after that than you. So that was her theory. So I think when you consume extra collagen and bone broth and stuff like that, even though the Lyme can go after that, it can't go after all of it. And so you consume it and it does get incorporated into your joints. And I know, I mean, I'm sitting here right now with bone on bone knees, patellas, I have virtually no pain. So that's very exciting. And so you take care of the pain. You can get injections for the pain, which I am not a candidate for right now because I don't have pain. So I manage it with acupuncture, which I had some last night. Acupuncture and Epsom salt baths and icing and compression and elevation. Elevating when I can. It's nice to, so when you ice, really you should sit and relax and elevate at the same time. It's not a good idea to put on your compression, your ice pack, and then go mow the lawn. That was what my chiropractor said to me. That when you do your icing, sit down, relax, put your feet up. That's the best way to do it. I was really impressed because my knee was sore. I iced it. It felt better. I went to sleep. Next morning, it was all better. It was incredible. So icing is good. You know, you take an ice pack, you put it on your knee, let it sit for 20 minutes. I set a timer and take it off. And you can do that up to 3 times a day. I've never done that. I've only done it once a day. But I find it really useful. So anyway, as far as Marissa goes, she is encouraging me to increase doses. But she said, because you're successful right now, you don't have to do it right now. And you don't have to change anything till after Florida. We want you want to make sure you're continuing to take your herbs. The other thing she said is that she asked me how consistent I had been with my tinctures. And I said, I was not being consistent until I talked to Mariah in October. Because I had been back and forth, and she said that when she had Lyme disease, she did the same thing. She found that when she stopped her herbs, symptoms would come back, and that you really need to stay on the program for at least a year. And that is what Mariah had said to me as well. So we figured out that I had started being consistent in October. So I'm going to be consistently taking herbs for Lyme disease until next October of 2025. Whatever, as long as I have the money and I can do it, I'm used to doing it, I'll do it. What are you gonna do? She did say that in terms of the co-infections, we can retest for co-infections in approximately August and see how the co-infections are doing. We'll test for Babesia and Bartonella at that time and see if the antibodies are gone from those, and then I can back off on co-infection targeted herbs. Although I think all the herbs target both. I mean, Sweet Annie goes after all three, and Hatunia goes after, I think, Bart and Lyme. So I don't know how much I'd be cutting back on. We'll see. But I want this eradicated. I agree with her. I do want it eradicated. I want to feel good. I want to ride my bike. The thing is, if I feel well enough to ride my bike, one of the good things about riding my bike is I heat my body up, and heating my body up kill spirochetes. I want to feel well enough so I can maybe go get an infrared sauna and not herx afterwards. And I think I may be ready to try that. And they have infrared sauna over at Yono, so I might try that. And the other thing is, do I want to try hyperbaric oxygen? And I have a couple of options to try that. They have the chamber over at Roots in Columbia, and they also have it in Hebron at Del Vitality. So I might try that. I don't want to buy a package. She said you have to have 40 hours of hyperbaric oxygen to have it help. And I'm like, yeah, that's a big investment of time and money. But I might try it just to see. I really want to try it to see what it's like to be in the hyperbaric chamber. So I have no idea how I'm going to feel when I do that. So I'll try it sometime. And I definitely want to try the infrared sauna and go back and do floats over at Yono, because those are very relaxing. And I know I do okay with the floats. I was concerned with floats that I would get up and I would feel dizzy. But that hasn't happened. I get up and I pretty much have to run for the bathroom because immersion diuresis. And then what you do is you make sure you have water there and you drink as soon as you are done with your float and schedule it right before restorative yoga class and then take restorative yoga. And it's wonderful. Really, really good. So anyway, so that's what's going on with Marissa. Boy, did she tell me anything else? Yeah, she encouraged me to drink water with electrolytes. Let's see if this glass has electrolytes in it. It does not. Okay, so we'll add electrolytes later. And so hydrate. And we looked at my labs. I do have elevated cholesterol, but she wasn't too concerned about it because my LDL cholesterol is large and buoyant. My LDL is elevated, but I also have high HDL at 81 and I have low triglycerides at 68. I think some of that has to do with all the fish oil I take. And she said, this is because of inflammation. I have a slightly elevated liver enzyme. She said, that's probably from Babesia. It's like a point out of range, so it's not a big deal. And I'm taking milk thistle to help support that. I've been thinking about taking organ supplements, getting a liver organ supplement and taking that in lieu of or in addition to the milk thistle. I might decide to do that. I'm not sure. So we'll see. So moving along, my back's been okay. I've been managing it with stretching and chiropractic, and my knees are improving. And then the Lyme disease and the tick-borne illness is improving. So that's exciting. All right. So then poor Ron, we are in the process of, he's now scheduled to get a Vibrant Wellness deep dive tick-borne illness test. So he's going to get that done. He's also going to go see Marissa. And Marissa and I talked about how, I would like him to see her because he doesn't entirely listen to me. And it's not because Ron's a bad guy or he's stubborn. He is stubborn, but that's not entirely it. They told us in school, don't treat your family. Your family won't listen to you. It's just a dynamic. They don't take you as seriously as if they go and pay and go to the doctor. So I'd like him to see her, and he's going to. And so I'm psyched about that. And I'm waiting for him to get testing because he needs investigation to see if he has intermittent claudication. So he needs to have an ultrasound or a blood pressure ratio test, however they do it, to see if he has that and to see if it's because of atherosclerosis or something else. And Marissa said to me, intermittent claudication can be caused by tick-borne illness. I would put money on Ron has chronic smoldering, at least Lyme disease, if not also babesiosis. And he's going to be frustrated because we're going to encourage him to go on the Buhner protocol and it's going to be hard for him. And anyway, so we'll see what happens, right? Okay. So let's move on to some other things. So let's talk about a couple weeks ago, I talked to you about, reminding you about hydration and the sun. A couple weeks ago, we recommended you to hydrate even though it's getting colder out, particularly because of the dry environment. Although the last few days it has started to rain. Thank goodness. So anyway, I wanted to remind you that even though the sun is lower and it's colder out, if you're going to spend time outdoors, it's still a good idea to use sunscreen on your exposed parts, especially if you're doing snow sports where the sun reflects off the snow. I've been riding my bike and remembered to put sunscreen on my face, which helped, but only did one application of lip balm with SPF at the beginning of my ride. It's a good idea to carry lip balm with SPF during outdoor activities and reapply. It was windy, so I had a combination of mild sunburn and simple chapping, which might have been better with a few applications of lip balm, especially after the rest stop where I had something to eat. If you're eating and drinking while you're outside, you're going to rub off the lip balm, so you need to reapply. You can get all-natural lip balm that uses zinc oxide as the sunblock, and zinc oxide is non-toxic, it's topical, and all it does is reflect sunlight off your skin, so it doesn't absorb in, it doesn't have the health liabilities that things like avobenzone and oxybenzone have. It's just metal, and zinc is a beneficial mineral. It's an essential mineral. You have to eat zinc to get it into your body, and zinc has a lot of properties in your body. And if you just put it on your skin, it just sits on your skin. It doesn't get absorbed, and it reflects light off it, as does titanium dioxide. But usually the nice natural companies will have, you know, beeswax and olive oil and cocoa butter and nice things in their lip balm and some zinc oxide. Yes, it can look a little white, but so what? It's, you know, my lips got a little chapped. The fun thing about getting chapped lips is then you get to use lip scrub, and lip scrub is very nice. So I enjoy using lip scrub. So there are good brands online and at your local health food store that have natural ingredients in them. It's a good idea to stay away from petroleum jelly, anything related to that. So I have a great lip salve that has hyaluronic acid in it too. And so those are great, getting lip salve that has hyaluronic acid in. Hyaluronic acid, as we said, part of your joints, it's a humectant. So when you put hyaluronic acid, you have face lotion that has hyaluronic acid in it. And I have lip balm, hyaluronic acid lip balm. And I try to put that on every single day. And it really helps. It's a great humectant, which means it draws moisture to it and it will keep moisture in your lips. And I also have a natural lip scrub, and the salve has sugar crystals in it. And if you get a lip scrub, you got to make sure it has something that's biodegradable. So if it has sugar crystals in it, that's fine, because it'll be a little bit abrasive. And then when it goes into your septic or into the, down the sink, wherever it's going, if it's going into the sewage system, if it's got sugar in it, it's just going to dissolve. And if it has apricot kernels, well, apricot kernels is not bad because that's sort of biodegradable too. But if it has little plastic beads in it, you don't want to use that. So just make sure if you're using something that's exfoliating, whatever it is, whether it's a body scrub or a lip scrub, that it has something biodegradable like apricot kernel seeds or like sugar, something that's not going to harm the environment. That's very nice. It's, you know, it's just sort of a spa-like thing where you do the lip scrub and you wash it off. And the lip scrub comes in nice flavors and scents. It comes in vanilla and or lime or whatever your preference is, citrus. And then you use that, and then you might want to wash it off, and then you put lip balm on it afterwards. Put the hyaluronic acid lip balm on it afterwards. And pardon me, my hyaluronic acid lip balm is unscented and unflavored, and I like to have flavors and scents, so then I'll put something else on top of it that's flavored and scented. And I have some great lip balms that are mostly shea butter and olive oil, and then they have natural scents in them, and they're lovely. So the lip scrub is a great stocking stuffer, you know, or little Hanukkah gift. It's a nice thing because you don't think about it and your lips do get chapped, and sometimes it's not enough to just use the balm and the salve. It's nice to have the scrub to exfoliate. I don't know if this has been studied, so I don't want to say that this is surely how it goes, but I have to wonder if you exfoliate, are you less likely to get skin cancer, whether on your lips or other places on your body? Because if you have any rogue cells, you're exfoliating, you're getting rid of any excess cells, you're having more cellular turnover. So if there are any bad guys, you might be getting rid of them faster if you do exfoliate. That's why it's good to sometimes use facial scrub that exfoliates your face, and to use some body scrub, especially if you spend time outdoors, and to use it on your lips as well. It's a similar principle to eating fiber. When you eat fiber, fiber goes through your digestive system. One of the functions of fiber, especially insoluble fiber, is to act like little brooms in your colon. One of the things that fiber does is you have, so the linings and coverings of your cells are called epithelial cells, and you have your whole body, your skin is entirely covered in epithelial cells. Anything that communicates with the outside has epithelial cells in it. So that means your entire digestive system is covered in them. The inside of your blood vessels is also covered in them, although they're not called epithelial, they're called endothelial because they're inside the blood vessels. But it's the same kind of, it's the same concept. And then women's vaginas that have epithelial cells in them because they can communicate with the outside world. And I believe that the urethra does as well. So anything that communicates with the outside world is going to be covered in epithelial cells. They're protective. And the top layer is so-called dead. It doesn't have circulation. So it turns over and it comes off. You have 7 layers of skin cells and they turn over. And I think it's the top 3 layers don't have circulation. The bottom 4 do. So your basal and your columnar cells are underneath the squamous layer. The squamous layer doesn't have the circulation and it comes off and recycles. And then your skin converts from basal to columnar to squamous and then it turns over. And then so when you're consuming fiber, you're scrubbing away that top layer. So if there are any rogue cells that could turn into colon cancer, the more fiber you eat, the less likely that is to happen. So people who don't eat their veggies, don't eat fiber regularly, are less likely to have are more likely to get colon cancer. And that's why when you look at the studies of people who are less likely to get colon cancer, they eat fruits and vegetables and they eat whole grains, because whole grains, again, has fiber. So scrubbing out the inside of your colon is very important. And if you use exfoliant on your body, on your lips, on your and on the skin outside of you, that's going to be helpful too. I would not recommend exfoliating the vagina. So, because that's a delicate area. However, the vagina does get dry and you use things as humectants to help the vagina to make sex more comfortable. You just don't exfoliate because it's a very delicate area. But what you do, there's various things you can do. You can put hyaluronic acid in the vagina and that draws water to it. And that helps to make sex more comfortable and just helps make walking around more comfortable. Hyaluronic acid is helpful. We use salves with hyaluronic acid. We use aloe. Aloe is also a humectant. It helps to draw water to any area on your body. That's why you put aloe on when you have a burn. It draws water to it. And aloe is an ingredient in lots of salves and lotions. And you can use straight up aloe from the plant. And as long as it doesn't have bacteria, excessive bacteria in it. You can use that as a salve for vaginal comfort. And the other thing that acts as a humectant, because it regenerates cells and glands, is estrogen. So that's why women are given estrogen creams and lotions to apply postmenopausally, because it's not as much a humectant as it is, it's proliferative. It causes the cells to regenerate, and the cells then go ahead and produce moisture, which will make you more comfortable in a number of ways. So you have epithelial cells in your vagina as well. So it's in your, so epithelial cells are in your vagina. It's in all of your skin. It's on anything that communicates with the outside world, any part of you, your respiratory tract, your digestive tract. And so all covered in epithelial lining. So take care of your skin, take care of your epithelial cells. All right. So here's a fun thing to talk about. Here's some ideas for hot beverages to drink this time of year. Because we want you to stay hydrated, and I'm going to stay hydrated at this moment as well. Hydrate. Okay. So Mexican hot chocolate or any hot chocolate. If you're adventurous, you can start with raw organic cocoa powder to taste. You may want to use dairy milk if you're not intolerant, or a dairy substitute if you are, or if you just prefer to limit your dairy. If you do, you want to heat the milk in a pot. Use the mugs you will use to measure how much milk you'll need in the pot. So if you're going to have this you know, pick your mug, how much you feel like drinking, and dump that in the pot. So just use the mug you're going to drink it out of to measure it. You don't have to use milk at all if you don't want to. You can use water instead. You can add a squirt of vanilla extract, a pinch of cinnamon, nutmeg, cardamom if you like, and cayenne pepper. You can sweeten to taste with coconut sugar or evaporated cane juice or something non-caloric like stevia or monk fruit. To make it easy, you can use an already prepared organic hot cocoa mix and simply add the seasonings to taste. So you have to decide what you want to do, because you can make up your own hot cocoa starting with raw organic cocoa powder, which you can get at most health food stores. You can order it online as well. That's going to be the healthiest form of cocoa. Sometimes you can find cocoa, hot cocoa, that's been made with raw organic cocoa powder. What you want to look for is to make sure the cocoa powder does not say it's been Dutched or alkalized. If it has been Dutched or alkalized, you could still drink it. It's just you're not going to get the high level of flavonoids you will if it hasn't been Dutched or alkalized. And if you get raw organic cocoa powder, it won't have been. Certain brands, the reason you Dutch or alkalize in the first place is because cocoa is frankly bitter, and not everybody likes bitter. And, you know, things that have a lot of mouthfeel that you want to consume all day, like, for example, Hershey's Kisses, you could eat way too many of them in a sitting because they have mouthfeel. The cocoa has been Dutched and sweetened, and it has some fermented milk in it, and you want to eat them all day. But a really good chocolate, you're going to want to sip on. And a really good chocolate bar that hasn't been alkalized, you're going to want to take a few bites, and you're not going to want to pound the whole chocolate bar. And so if you can find cocoa powder, you know, a prepared hot cocoa mix that has non-Dutch, non-alkalized cocoa in it, that there are brands that have that. You just have to find them, and usually you're going to find them online or at your health food store. And then you don't have to do anything to them. A lot of prepared cocoa powders are Dutched because, you know, the majority of people think they taste better because they're not so bitter. And just realize it's not going to hurt you to have Dutched hot cocoa. It's just that you're not going to get as many antioxidants. So enjoy it. I mean, if you're out somewhere and you want to have hot cocoa because 'tis the season, it's okay. It's just that if you're looking for a really healthy hot cocoa, you want it to be non-Dutch, non-alkalized. But to dress it up, it's really nice to have those other additions in it. Then there's hot tea. Have you had a cup this year yet? I happen to love really good quality black tea. I love English breakfast tea. And English breakfast, Irish breakfast. I've even had Scottish breakfast. I like really good brands. I don't like your basic supermarket brands. And I said this to a patient. I told them I was a tea snob, and he said, "What? Can you be a tea snob?" I said, "Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. Having basic supermarket black tea to me tastes like dirt." And I talked to my friend who is English, and she said the same thing. And she said it's because you're supposed to use the leaves, and you're not supposed to use the sticks and the roots and the bark. You're supposed to just use the tender leaves at the end, and that's where you get the most flavor. And if you're getting that dirt taste, they're using too much of the plant, and that makes it cheap. So I was very blessed in that I have a friend, my other cousin Randy, who went to Sri Lanka, and I heard that she was going to Sri Lanka. I said, "Oh, will you please bring me back some tea?" And she did, and she brought me a selection of teas from Sri Lanka, and they grow wonderful tea in Sri Lanka. So it was a sampler pack of these little boxes of tea in foil pouches, loose. They all taste slightly different, and they're amazing. So I had a cup of that yesterday. They're just so good. I like it with a little bit of honey, and that's all. I don't like, I don't generally like tea with milk or cream in it. You know, they like that. And the whole thing about it, this was interesting. I learned that the reason that they put milk and cream in tea in England is because people were poor, and putting the milk or cream in extended the amount of tea they could drink. So you could put milk in and have the same tea bag or the same tea leaves and just keep pouring it in. So I tend not to do that. And the thing is, you know, your tea bag is probably good for a couple of cups of tea. I tend to only use tea leaves once, but you could probably, you know, get another cup out of the same tea bag if you wanted to. Or you put it in a teapot and you put twice as much water in as you would have in your cup, and it's probably going to be fine. It's amazing how wonderful the tea is from Sri Lanka. And tea that's from India is going to be good. But the basic tea that I like Assam tea. They call it Ceylon tea, which is what Sri Lanka used to be called before it became independent. And I think Ceylon, when it was Ceylon, I don't know if it was owned by Portugal. It was owned by another country anyway. But Assam and Ceylon tea are the basic building blocks of English breakfast tea. And English breakfast tea, depending on who's making it, can taste a little bit different. But it's basically a blend of Assam and Ceylon. And I love those. I think those are great. And then once you get to Sri Lanka, there's not one kind of Ceylon tea. There's a whole bunch. And it probably depends on the variety of leaf and where it was grown and how it was fermented and for how long. And they all taste a little bit different. Some of them are fruitier. Some of them are more bitter. Some of them are stronger. I talked to a woman who sold tea a long time ago. And I talked about how I liked Assam tea because I liked the bold flavor. She said, people who like Assam are generally people who also like coffee because it's got a very bold taste to it, and it's the closest to coffee because it's pretty bitter. And I like the interplay of that bitterness with the honey. It's really wonderful. And the thing with black tea, black tea, remember that the tea plant, Camellia sinensis, white, green, and black tea are all the same plant. White tea is the first picking of the leaves before they're opened up and they have little white hairs on them. Green tea is when they have opened up and now they're green, and then you steam them slightly and now you have green tea. When you take those green tea leaves and you pulverize them into a powder, now you have matcha tea. And the thing about matcha tea is when you drink matcha, you're consuming the leaves, so you're getting more antioxidants. Whereas when you steep tea, you're not consuming the leaves. You steep the tea, making an infusion, and you're not going to get as many constituents. Oolong tea is when you partially ferment green tea, and it's only partially fermented and has a different taste than black tea. So black tea is fully fermented tea and has its distinctive taste. They all have immune compounds in them. The immune compounds are highest in white tea because you have compounds that are present no other time before the tea leaves unfurl. So you have growth factors in there that are really helpful for the immune system. When they open up, you don't have as much growth factors because now the tea leaves are mature. But you still have amazing immune compounds in green tea, including especially EGCG, which is the epigallocatechin gallate. Is a great antioxidant and it's supportive to the immune system. It's been studied to have anti-cancer properties. And so it's helpful there. All of the varieties of Camellia sinensis contain theanine. Theanine is an amino acid that is calming. It helps to gently support GABA function, gamma aminobutyric acid, which is calming. And I have trouble taking things that increase my GABA too much because they knock me out. Whereas theanine does not. And I do very well with tea. I do better with tea than I do with coffee, even though I still drink some coffee. But I can't drink a lot of coffee at all. Whereas tea, I can drink more and be okay with it, probably because tea, whether you do white, green, or black, or oolong, has theanine in it. And the theanine is calming. So it's helps to mitigate the stimulating effect of caffeine. So it's good for you in a lot of ways. Tea also has tannins in it, and tannins are antimicrobial. You're going to get the most tannins in black tea. Some people get an upset stomach from black tea. I think I get more of an upset stomach from your basic supermarket tea, so it makes me wonder if supermarket tea that hasn't been carefully picked and selected for the best parts of the leaves I wonder if it has more tannins in it, because tannins can be irritating to your stomach, but they also kill microorganisms. They lots of different ones. They kill pathogenic bacteria, and they also kill yeast. So if you can take tannins, if you can drink tea with tannins in it, and the thing is, if you steep your tea for a long time, you're going to get more tannins in your tea. And the people who are really tea snobs, worse than me, won't steep their tea for very long. So there's less tannic acid, but I don't mind if the tannic acid is in there, except that it irritates me if it's supermarket tea that hasn't been carefully picked. So hot tea can be really lovely. If your favorite green tea can be great. It can be flavored with ginger or mint if that's your thing. If you want to have something without caffeine, you can consider rooibos teas. And rooibos is Afrikaans for red bush. So it comes from South Africa. And it has a beautiful red color and therefore very helpful antioxidants. You can get rooibos chai with chai seasonings in it. So it has no caffeine, but it has chai seasonings. So you can have your chai without the caffeine if you want that. I bought a box for mom. I don't know if she'll listen to this, but guess what? She's going to get a box of rooibos chai sent to her. Then you can also drink Tulsi tea. Tulsi tea is holy basil. It's calming. It's an adaptogen. So it helps to strengthen your immune system. So the Tulsi tea, I drink the Tulsi tea at night, but that wasn't enough to improve my energy. I needed the cordyceps too. And to take the chlorella early in the day and not in the middle of the night, because chlorella was waking me up in the middle of the night. So Tulsi comes in numerous flavors. If you get tea bags, it comes in flavors like lemon ginger, rose, hibiscus, and ashwagandha. And the ashwagandha will give you extra calming. I have this ashwagandha problem, but most people don't. I mean, I have a lot of patients take ashwagandha and they're fine. It doesn't excessively knock them out. So that you can get Tulsi with ashwagandha already in it. Then there's golden milk. You can get pre-mixed versions of golden milk and heat up some milk or milk substitute, whatever you want, and add some raw local honey for flavor. So golden milk is a beverage where it features turmeric. So it's wonderfully anti-inflammatory. It's really good for you. And nice golden milk will have some coconut in it. It may have dairy in it as well, but it will generally have coconut or coconut milk. So that when you get golden milk mixed, sometimes you get golden milk that's mixed. The mixture is in coconut oil, in virgin coconut oil. And sometimes you can just get powder. And you can also make your own. So you get your milk or your milk substitute, and you can throw in, if you just have powdered stuff, you can put in your own virgin coconut oil if you want to. You can add some raw local honey for flavor, and you add turmeric, a little black pepper. If you put black pepper with turmeric, it significantly increases your ability to absorb the turmeric through your digestive system. You add ginger, cardamom, and you can add cayenne if you like that too. And you can add it to hot milk or a milk substitute. And if you want to have hot raw organic cocoa, you could do that too. And then you can have golden milk, chocolate golden milk. That's fine too. But that's a really great thing to have this time of year. The honey and the virgin coconut oil are antimicrobial and have flavonoids in them. And then this is also going to be good for your immune system. And it's wonderfully anti-inflammatory and relaxing. And if you want, you can also do golden milk. If you want caffeine in your golden milk, you can make golden milk chai, and put a black tea bag in of your choice. And then you can have, put chocolate in. That is very exciting. Chocolate chai is yummy. I've had that before. So remember, the word chai is just an Indian word for tea. But when we say chai in the U.S. or in English-speaking countries, we're referring to seasoned black tea, usually with milk. And that's delicious. I love chai. I love chai-flavored things. One of the best things I've had is chai ice cream. What's also really good is matcha ice cream, although I have to be careful because I can't eat a lot of dairy, and I haven't seen dairy-free matcha or chai ice cream, and I'm hoping that comes to exist. And the thing is, if I really wanted to, I could make it. I could take some good, you know, non-dairy vanilla ice cream and melt it down a little bit and then add seasonings to it. I could put some tea into it. And I don't know if I do the leaves or if I do brewed tea and add that to it, but that will water it down a little bit. That's my concern. And then add the seasonings to it. Add ginger and cardamom and maybe black pepper and then have the I think the tea is what brings it all together. So you need the tea flavoring in it. Maybe a way to do it would be to get a good quality dehydrated tea and mix that in along with the ginger, cardamom, and black pepper, and then you'd have non-dairy chai ice cream. So that would be yummy too. The other thing to do would be to make chai seasoned chia pudding. That would be exciting too. Again, you could season your chia pudding, and you do chia seeds, and you cover it in. If you want to make it non-dairy, your favorite non-dairy milk, and I recommend coconut milk or cashew milk to make so it's a little fatty. And the fat will bring out the flavors and the seasonings that you're using. And then again, you put in your ginger, your cardamom, tea powder if you want to, or if you want to do green tea, then that's easy because you have matcha. You can also, or you can just use black tea leaves. And one way to do it would be to get your favorite loose tea and put it in a food processor so it turns it into a powder and then put that in. And that would be a way to flavor it. I'm going to have to experiment with this and see how this happens. All right. So here's some more ideas for stuff to hydrate you that are not necessarily hot beverages. Remember to drink water with electrolytes. With the electrolytes, you can get unflavored or you can add your own fruit or flavoring to it. You can also get mildly flavored ones that will keep you hydrated while you're busy. And I find that electrolyte powders that are meant for sport have a lot of tartness to them. They have a lot of citric acid in them. Citric acid isn't wonderful for your teeth. It's also too tart to be drinking all day. And sometimes electrolytes that are meant for sport will have things like B vitamins in it. I found an electrolyte powder that had creatine and ATP in it. And that's really great if you're on your bike or you're actually doing a sport, but you might not want to be sipping on that all day. And I tried to do that and it bothered my stomach. There are electrolyte powders that have B vitamins in them. And again, personally, I think that's fine if I'm working out, but if I'm just sipping on it at my desk all day, that will hit my stomach wrong. I have to be careful with B vitamins. I can take a B vitamin as long as it's in a food-based tablet, then it doesn't bother my stomach. But if it's in my electrolyte powder and I'm sipping on it all day, that's going to hit my stomach wrong. So I like the electrolyte powders that don't have B vitamins in them just to sip on all day. You can get electrolyte powders with no, or electrolyte drops with no flavoring. They're just basically salt and magnesium and potassium, and if you get a good one, it has concentrated trace minerals in it. And you can put a few drops into your water. You can drink it just like that. And if you want to flavor it, then you can put in a splash of your favorite fruit juice or squeeze in some fruit if you want to, or throw in ginger or cucumber or any seasoning, basil if you want to. So those are ways to do electrolytes. Then there's seltzer water. Seltzer water, if you want to pour over ice, you can do that. You can get flavored, already prepared with a splash of fruit juice, or you can get plain seltzer water, add your own fruit to it. If you like seltzer water, if you like fizzy water better than flat water, you can put your electrolytes in the fizzy water, and then you have electrolyte fizzy water. That works too. So those are ways to hydrate you. All right, so now we're going to move along. We don't have too much time yet, but I'm going to go on with the series on helping with osteoarthritis. So I have a few more minutes left, and we'll get started on that. I don't think I talked about the incidence of osteoarthritis in the U.S., so let's do that. So let me see. So the prevalence and burden of osteoarthritis, 43% of people with osteoarthritis are 65 or older, and 88% of people with osteoarthritis are 45 or older. I'm definitely 45 or older. Right now I'm 60. I'm on my birthday, I'm going to be 61. Very exciting. So the annual incidence, that means incidence means new diagnosis, is highest between 55 and 64 years old. I know that I was diagnosed this year, but I'm sure I've had it for many. Well, I've diagnosed with spondylosis years ago. So, and that's a form of osteoarthritis. And most people with osteoarthritis are women, 62%. Again, probably because testosterone maintains your joints and regeneration, and we don't have as much of it. So estrogen isn't as good at maintaining your joints and regeneration. It is good, but not as good as testosterone. Testosterone is very proliferative, and that's why men have bigger bones. They have generally more muscle mass. And generally, they don't have as much degeneration as we do. Not that they don't have it, they do. 78% of people with osteoarthritis are non-Hispanic whites. But within race and ethnic groups, non-Hispanic, Black, and Hispanic populations have higher rates of osteoarthritis than non-Hispanic whites. So it's 78% of people of all cases are non-Hispanic whites, but within those ethnic groups, the rate is higher. And the highest proportion are American Indians. And there are racial disparities with musculoskeletal health, and it affects people of color more than white people. So people with osteoarthritis tend to have more pain, fatigue, levels of disability than people compared to their age. While arthritis pain is extremely individualized, severe joint pain is not uncommon, and recent estimates suggest that a quarter of adults with arthritis experience severe joint pain. Severe joint pain occurs more often in middle-aged adults ages 45 to 64, women, non-Hispanic Blacks, Hispanics, and those with a disability, and people who also happen to have obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and psychological distress. 99% of all hip and knee replacements are done to address pain and functional limitations. Over half the people with knee osteoarthritis will have a total knee replacement done during their lifetime. So for me, it's a 50-50 shot. Ugh, both knees. Oh no. All right. It can make you depressed and socially isolated to have osteoarthritis. They tend to have more depression or anxiety. Why? Because you can do less stuff. You know, you can't, your activity is limited. People with doctor-diagnosed arthritis report more days in the last month of poor mental health, and they're socialized. I mean, I know that, you know, on days when my knees hurt, it upsets me, not so much because the pain, but because the pain is telling me you have to curtail your activities. When I curtail my activities, I am not a happy camper, especially when the activities curtailed are exercise, yoga, especially yoga and cycling. And of course, osteoarthritis tends to limit your activity. And almost 44% of people with arthritis have arthritis attributable activity limitations. So they limit their usual activities because of the arthritis. And when mine's flared, that is what I do. And by 2040, 11.4% of all adults will experience arthritis attributable activity limitations. Black people with knee osteoarthritis have greater prevalence, severity, progression, and worse pain and function compared with whites. And over 60% of American Indians report arthritis attributable activity limitations and mobility restrictions. And 30% of people with adults with arthritis find stooping, bending, and kneeling very difficult. I have some difficulty I can do it. It's just, I'm afraid it's going to hurt my knees. I can do yogi squats. I'm able to do them, but I'm afraid it's going to hurt my knees. So I've been curtailing that. And before the last flare, I did not curtail that. I'm afraid to try it again. And I probably should ask somebody, is it safe for me to do a yogi squat? So there's an economic burden. Because of osteoarthritis, an estimated 1 million knee and hip replacements are completed each year. In 2013, osteoarthritis was the second most costly health condition treated at hospitals in the U.S., and there were lost wages. A lot of lost wages and increased absenteeism for osteoarthritis. It's workers with osteoarthritis miss an average of 2 more days a year than workers without it. And presenteeism, which is loss of productivity while on the job, is less easy to calculate, but that's also a thing. Presenteeism, I never heard that term before. That's when you go to work, but you're not able to perform your job as well because you have a condition that makes it harder to do. So next time we talk about osteoarthritis, we're going to talk about, there's a few more things about osteoarthritis I want to talk about. There's supplements to use, there's treatments to use. So there's a number of things that can be helpful. But I think at this time, I'm going to let you go. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopath physician. My co-host Ron Manizza will be making his shows on a different day for the month of December because he's teaching a fitness class at our usual time. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores and WHUS.org.